Hey everybody, James Tiley at Cyber FM Radio with Johnny Fry. I love saying J-O-N-N-Y, Fry, Team Blockchain. And this is our December 15th newsletter that we're going to go over. You know, Johnny always has at least three or four good articles. He's got the guest article that he's going to talk about. I believe that's DLA Piper. But first, we're going to go through the first three and have Johnny catch us up on what's been going on. We're running out of time for 2021, and January is going to be a lot of fun, I think, with Team Blockchain. But we are down to the last few, down to the wire. What do you think, Johnny?
Yeah, you're right. Well, yeah, good to be back on the air with you again, James. And yeah, say December 15th, DigiBytes. And for new listeners, basically what we're doing is looking at how, where and why blockchain technology and digital assets. So that covers a huge multiple of different items. So it's things like non-fungible tokens, DeFi, crypto, digitization of real assets, equities, bonds, debts, real estate, things like that. And what we're not doing, we're not looking to make recommendations and tips. We're really trying to sort of point out some of the things that are happening in different countries and different industries. It's a weekly newsletter. And obviously, if you'd like a copy, then contact either James at cyber.fm radio, or you can contact myself. Find me on LinkedIn is probably the easiest bet. J-O-N-N-Y. That's Johnny.Fry. And happy to send you a newsletter. But this week, we kicked off by looking at what's happening to digital payments. In particular, our friends Facebook now being metamorphosized and become Meta. And what was interesting is that Facebook really shook the whole banking world back in June 2018 when they came out with this thing called Diem, or Libra, as it initially was called. And they had, you know, organizations like Visa and MasterCard and PayPal who said, yeah, we want to be part of this, because at the end of the day, Facebook have got about 2.8 billion users every month. And that gives them three times the number of users that are existing in the G7 economies. And if they start using a digital payment, as opposed to using, you know, pounds, dollars, yen, Swiss franc, whatever, then you could suddenly see governments being very much marginalized because they would lose influence over their economies. So a number of governments jumped up and down on Facebook, and, you know, it's sort of, it's all gone a little bit quiet. And then up comes WhatsApp. And for those of you who'd be familiar, Facebook acquired WhatsApp back in 2014. It had only been going 3 years, and they paid $19 billion. And it made it one of the biggest sort of tech acquisitions that we've seen anywhere. And certainly it's the biggest acquisition that Facebook has done. And what we were really looking at was, you know, how safe are these stable coins, and why is this important? And for the regular listeners, you'll be familiar. We sometimes go back in history and look, what can previous events teach us and tell us about what's happened in the past? And what we're talking about here is really the whole problem with fractional banking. And without getting too technical, basically, when you deposit your money with a bank, whether it's in Europe or whether it's in America or whether it's in Asia, typically that bank will only keep a fraction of your cash themselves, because as you're no doubt familiar, what banks do is they make their money by lending your money to someone else, and they pocket the difference in terms of the interest. So I put £1,000 into I don't know, a bank account here in the UK, and James comes along and says he wants to borrow, say, you know, £10,000, and they say, well, no problem at all, it's unlikely that Johnny is going to want his money back, we'll just keep a little bit of that money back and James will lend you. So Johnny, we're going to pay you 0.5%, and James, we're going to charge you 3.5% for the joy of borrowing money from us. And they pocket the 3% differential. Now, clearly, it's not all profit, because, you know, James doesn't always pay the money back, and therefore they've got to cover their losses. But nevertheless, it was interesting. We looked at a quote from, you know, from Keynes, who is a very well-known economist. And he came out, John Maynard Keynes came out with a quote when he was talking about sort of, you know, the fractional reserve banking, which is what the governments also adopt. And he said, by this means, fractional banking, governments may secretly and unobserved confiscate the wealth of the people, and not one man in a million will detect that theft. Now, as opposed to putting your money in a bank, i.e. a bank deposit, where in theory it should be nice and safe, what you could do is actually create a stable coin. And you could actually go to the bank and say, here you go, here's the money, and we would like you to hold that money in the bag of cash, if you like. You cannot lend it out to anyone else. It's our money. So we just want you to be the custodian of that money. So effectively what you're doing is creating the ability to have a digital asset, a stable coin, mind, backed by cash. And we could well go back to a situation whereby we see many institutions, you know, such as Facebook, offering this type of facility and creating sort of a number of stable coins, which if that does happen, then according to the World Bank, there's about 1.7 billion people are outside the banking system. Yet at two thirds, 66% of them have access to a mobile device. So if they could get access to a mobile device and they could get access to a digital currency, then we could see more people being engaged in this space. So WhatsApp announcement is, we believe, just another sign that the traditional banks are getting more and more competition in their payment services. But you have to ask, what happens if we stop putting our money in the banks, or perhaps not us, but certainly the big institutions like Facebook? Who is going to lend money? Now, two answers possibly. One is what's happening in the DeFi space. And a second one is looking at the buy now, pay later. And this is whereby you buy a good, and instead of paying for all of the money up, or, you know, the buying a pair of jeans, let's say now, you can actually spread that over the next 3 or 4 months. So you're buying now, but you're paying later over a period of time. And your companies like Klarna is a classic example whereby, you know, they're now one of the biggest fintech banks in Europe. Or you've got PayPal themselves. I think they did over a billion buy now, pay now transactions just on sort of recently on Black Thursday. So this is a sector really, really growing. And I think it will get much, much bigger. So interesting to see what happens as we see digital payments coming along. And, you know, once again, Facebook has been in the front of that with what they've been doing, James.
I've used Klarna and Affirm, a couple of others here and there. Very useful. It's, of course, with fiat.
Yep. I haven't found out whether Klarna, I know PayPal and Square and people like that are taking digital currencies. I don't know whether Klarna are doing it yet. I bet they will be, because obviously with the work that's been going on with Visa and MasterCard as two of the biggest payment platforms, they're certainly looking for all of their merchants to actually engage. Talking of which, I can't remember now. Did we talk about the number of transactions on MasterCard compared to Ethereum last week, James? Does that ring a bell?
I do believe you brought that up. I do believe that.
Yeah. So for those that didn't hear it, but we got some data from Royal Bank of Canada, and they reckon MasterCard has transacted in 2021, $6.3 trillion worth of transactions.
Right.
And Ethereum so far have actually transacted $6.2 trillion. Now, the only real reason for mentioning those numbers, and a trillion's a lot of noughts, as we well know, is it just goes to show the scale, because a lot of people have said blockchain technology isn't scalable. It can't cope with lots of transactions. Well, clearly, just one blockchain here, just Ethereum, not talking about all the blockchains, just one blockchain has done nearly as many transactions this year as MasterCard. So that shows that, you know, this thing has got legs, as they say.
And we are to believe that nobody knows what Ethereum is, right?
Absolutely, because no one's using it.
No one's using it.
So the other article we had this week, we actually had a company called Checkd, CHEQD. And basically what they have done is they're specialist in self-sovereign identity. And they pose quite an interesting question, sort of metaverse and self-sovereign identity, the new superpower. And really what they were trying to explain to us was the concept of metaverse and what does it actually mean, and the ability of effectively having a digital twin. And many people initially will be thinking, well, why do I care about the metaverse? It's not, I don't spend lots of time online. You know, it's not something which I'm particularly engaged in necessarily. If you're probably extremely young, or if you're sort of probably, I don't know, possibly over 50, it's not something which you're necessarily going to be concentrating on. But as we've seen, if you like, the disbursement and concentration of certainly TV, and you used to sit down on a Saturday night and watch perhaps a TV show, and they'd have millions or tens of millions of people watching it, or even something like the Super Bowl. You know, these are big occasions whereby they can almost guarantee to get millions and millions of viewers. Well, what's happening now? People are spending more time in a virtual world on online gaming. And when I mean gaming, I don't mean gambling here. I mean, you know, sort of, you know, Sony PlayStations or playing these sort of various other games like that. And what we're seeing is people now are creating, if you like, their own virtual world, a metaverse. And we're seeing some very, very large brands, you know, Nike, Gucci, Burberry, Coca-Cola, Wendy's, these sorts of companies that are spending a huge amount of money, and you can buy virtual products and services. So you could be walking down a virtual world wearing a pair of Nike shoes. And in some cases, you know, people are paying more for a virtual, say, handbag from Gucci than they pay for the actual original. Now, in order for that to all work, you want to make sure you're dealing with the right person. And are you just dealing if you like, an avatar that no one really knows? And this is where self-sovereign identity comes into it. And they're arguing that the digital identity on the metaverse is really important, because if you're going to pay someone for a good and a service, and we're talking about potentially thousands of pounds here, you want to make sure you know who you're dealing with, so that you know you're going to be able to verify the credentials and start establishing a trust, so that you're happy then to trade as if you were standing in front of someone on a face-to-face basis. So we're beginning to see the self-sovereign identity sort of emerging as a concept, whereby you can control the amount of information that you give up. But self-sovereign identity has the potential to solve some of the security and privacy issues that if you're going to not just be storing personal information on a central database, but the individual is given control over what information they actually share and store on an ongoing basis. So, yeah, and I thought it was an interesting article about certainly this emerging concept of metaverse, and more people seem to be talking about sort of the importance and role self-sovereign identity is going to be playing going forward.
You know, think about it. They don't cover this, I don't think, in the article, but absolutely in the future, and I'm not even in the future because I've already done it, you see your doctor via telehealth, okay? Yep. And you have a conversation and you go, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor says, well, don't do that. But you're doing it on telehealth. It's absolutely going to be a part of the metaverse. And It's how important is it that you have that verified identity, that you're actually talking to your doctor?
And from the doctor's point of view, how does he know he's talking to you and not talking to me? And suddenly he prescribes me penicillin and finds it turns up at your doorstep and you're allergic to penicillin. So they've got to be really careful they know who they are dealing with as well.
I mean, that one situation alone calls the requirement.
And James, this is completely outside of the need for KYC for financial services to make sure money's not being laundered and all that sort of stuff. Because, you know, you've probably seen in the news, actually it was day before yesterday, so it was the 13th December, United Bank of Switzerland, huge Swiss bank, were fined 4 billion euros for poor KYC and AML records and what they were doing. And they went to court and they argued. They didn't argue that they hadn't broken the rules, but they said that the amount of fine was too much. And so they managed to get their fine reduced from 4 billion to 1.8 billion because they hadn't been doing their job correct. But if they had tight self-sovereign identity and they knew who they were dealing with, then when the regulator comes knocking and say, well, did you know that, you know, Johnny Fry is, you know, doing something a little bit naughty, instead of saying, no, didn't realize that our records weren't good enough, they'd be able to say, that's why we don't deal with him. So this is really important. And the current system that we have of checking your driving license or your passport or your utility bills and all this paper nonsense, it's proving relatively easy to get around the systems and procedures and controls of some of our biggest and best banks. And it's not just UBS. You know, early this year, one of the banks here in the UK, NatWest, they got fined 240 million for similar sort of things, you know. And, you know, many US banks have fallen foul of this, and certainly banks in Asia are exactly the same. So the current system doesn't seem to be fit for purpose. And what we've got to have is, using blockchain technology, you get much greater transparency and you can have this information in real time. And that's going to be a very valuable tool for financial services companies. But notwithstanding that, as you've already identified in the healthcare system, you know, they can also be using it, you know, for health purposes, which is really quite interesting.
It reminds me of, I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine and I made a joke. So up in New York, the children ages 5 through 11 now have to show proof of vaccination in order to attend even school activities and extracurricular stuff. So 5 years old, a 5-year-old has to show vaccination records to go to a restaurant with your parents, right? And the joke I had made to my friend was, of course. I mean, why not? Every 5-year-old has the capability of not losing a piece of paper.
Very true. Very, 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 very true. But James, coming up after the break, I know we've got the legal firm, DLA Piper, who big law firm here in Europe, big one also in the States. And interesting, they're talking about non-fungible tokens. And in particular, they're focusing in on sort of non-fungible tokens in the sports sector. And they pose the question, manna from heaven? Question mark. So we got Nicholas Fitzpatrick from DLA Piper coming up after the break, and he'll be talking us about non-fungible tokens. We've seen them in obviously the NBA in the state. We're seeing them in the Bundesliga in Germany. So in a variety of different sporting areas, we're seeing this type of digital asset being used to make money but to engage with the fans. So looking forward to after the break. So we'll take a break now, and we'll be back in a few moments talking to Nicholas Fitzpatrick from DLA Piper.
All right. Sounds like a plan. I will see you in two.
Brilliant.
Hey, Johnny, we're back again. I think there's a song revolving around that. Johnny's back again. And he's bringing from DLA Piper, it's Nick, right?
Yeah, Nick Fitzpatrick. Pleased to meet you.
Great to meet you. Johnny always brings on like high caliber type people like yourself. And I sit here and I just
we made an exception this week. We've got a lawyer on the line.
Yeah.
Oh, can we make lawyer jokes?
I'm seldom called high caliber. Yes, very good. Feel free. Go ahead and do it. If I can make American jokes.
I can smell this podcast. Now go okay. For it, Johnny. Bring him on.
All right, brilliant. Well, yeah, thanks, James. Good to be back after the break. And Nick, welcome to Digital Bite Show on Cyber.fm Radio. And delighted that you managed to join us today. And you wrote a really interesting article in this week's edition about non-fungible tokens in sports. And you're saying manna from heaven is with a question mark. So I assume being a legal, there's some good and bad news with all these sort of different sports teams and leagues and things like that getting involved with NFTs.
Well, you know, Johnny, one of the benefits of being a lawyer is that you you make your living dealing with the good points as well as the bad points. So one of the reasons why I think we get a bad name is that we like to point out the difficulties and the problems alongside the opportunities. So you can't blame me. You can't blame me for the question mark.
Well, I just thought you were going to try and argue the other side, whichever way I go. Oh, no, don't forget the question mark.
See, okay. I thought he was going to say he goes to all the games for free.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, there's just obviously a large opportunity being demonstrated by the numbers coming out of NFT offerings. When, you know, we saw the first reports coming out of the States of these terrific results from the NBA, you know, offerings that were going on, it's fair to say that I don't think in these COVID times a single sports federation or sports club or, frankly, probably most athletes didn't sit there thinking, right, I want to get in on this. And so what we've seen is this immediate and huge spike of interest and activity as our clients, who are both the tech companies operating these systems and also the sports governing bodies and sports clubs who are trying to do the deals, as they position themselves in relation to the market. And, you know, there's huge opportunities, lots of crazy numbers being attached to this, and, you know, not inconsiderable difficulties as well. But, you know, they're not insuperable, but they're issues that folks have to bear in mind. It's much the same when any new technology comes into the market. You're not doing it on a completely greenfield site. You're operating in a field where people have been doing deals for many years without any knowledge that this was coming down the path, right? So interpreting all your existing arrangements to work out quite whether you've got the rights to do what you want to do is no mean task for most folks.
Right. Okay. So a couple of things just wanted to, first of all, from the audience point of view, your law firm, although you're based here in London, the UK, your DLA Piper is actually a pretty large firm in the States as well. So we're actually talking not just UK centric, and it's quite important because you've got some insight and some experience, obviously, dealing outside the UK. But the thing that I was interested in, you know, I come along and I'm sort of, you know, XYZ football club, rugby club, hockey club, water polo club, whatever club you want to think. And I say, I want to do an NFT. Have I got any idea what I'm talking about? Are they fairly clued up, these clients that come in to talk to you? Or is it the classic bandwagon they're trying to jump on?
It's a mixture, obviously. I think that, you know, you've got some very sophisticated corporate bodies who are looking at this, and you've got folks who have seen a number and would like that number to be added to their spreadsheets. I mean, it's a new market. I mean, everybody's got a loose idea what NFT means. It's when you dig down into it, that the complexities of the issues that you need to deal with in getting a functioning program up and running, that you know, that those things emerge as you're going through the issues and the documents. So everybody's got an idea, but there aren't many people actually that've got a very full idea of the complexities, right, until they dig into it.
Right. And do you see this as a fad? Is it going to be like, you know, you and I are not dissimilar, I'm sure. You know, we were trading sort of football cards in the playground, you know, in our day, and then I haven't seen one of those for yonks. Do you think yeah, that's going to be the same for this? It's going to be a flash in the pan, or do you think there's more stickability?
I have seen those because my son still collects them and and spends a fortune on them. So that market is certainly not dead and gone, and most folks are still licensing into it. If your answer to the question is it taking over that market?
Yeah.
Or is it going to die a death in some way? My answer to that is probably neither, actually. I think that there's still going to be a place for collectibles of all, you know, people like collections, right? And, yeah, you know, people like old-fashioned things that they can hold in their hand, and there's no suggestion that that's going to stop anytime soon. And increasingly, they are prepared to shift that interest into the digital market and, you know, translate their love of it into collectibles online. For me, so I think there's going to be two windows there, and they're going to operate more or less alongside by side for quite some time. And you're bound to see some consolidation in the market. You're bound to see some folks who are in the NFT market interested in and getting acquisitive around the kind of relationships that have been built by some of the traditional card providers. You're going to see some of the card providers, the collectibles providers, obviously trying to mutate their business to get into this market. So all that's, you know, in progress, in train at the moment. And that's one of the stories that are going to play out over the next few years. The other bit of it,
IP, Nick, surely if you've got any sort of IP, physical IP, then you've got an opportunity to digitize that and create one of these NFTs. Is that a fair comment?
You've got an opportunity. It's the question is whether you're creating something that's of appeal. And there's a big issue around uniqueness and exclusivity, obviously, here. You know, what you don't want is a crowded market with lots of different offerings coming from different people with similar imagery, covering similar spaces, because it doesn't create a useful, you know, consumer journey, as they say, for your folks trying to buy. And so I think that obviously for all sports, the issue is how you create distinctive offerings that separate you in the marketplace. And yeah, so that's the answer. What you want to do is aggregate your intellectual property in the best way, work out what you can offer exclusivity around and promote that exclusivity.
Right. And what are you promoting? Are you promoting security? Is this regulated? Can you see this getting regulated?
Well, I mean, the other beautiful thing about this, obviously, is it's a global industry.
Yep.
So there are going to be a patchwork of responses from regulators. There is already a mix of response or as yet non-response but around the regulation of this element of blockchain activity. Mm-hmm. All regulators have got an issue with regard to the regulation of security. It's one of the most highly regulated parts of human endeavor. And there's going to be alongside gambling, which incidentally this also impacts.
Well,
and you know, on the whole, regulators, certainly those that we're dealing with, are not regarding them as tradable securities, but it's an international picture and a complex picture. It all depends on how they're structured and how what goes into the package. One of the other issues, though, is AML, anti-money laundering, AML, as we lawyers call it. And that does also, internationally, many jurisdictions have programs requiring folks who are offering programs to be registered and to adhere to certain qualifications and codes in relation to anti-money laundering provisions. And their regulators are interested, including in the UK. So one of the obstacles here, one of the things that need folks to think about when they go to market from a regulatory perspective, is the time, the lead-in time it takes to get comfortable with the local regulatory environment, and also make necessary applications. You know, these things don't necessarily happen overnight. You don't fill in a form and get your registration. These things can take months. So in a market where everybody's desperate to try and get into the play and into the market, then that's a material issue, and folks need to make workarounds to deal with that and stay regulatory compliant.
Okay, because that. I'm just thinking from a UK perspective. If these are treated as some form of crypto or digital asset, then anyone that's dealing in them, promoting them, selling them, trading them, they've got to be regulated. They've got to be on the FCA crypto register, surely. So if I don't know XYZ football club, and I suddenly say, well, I've got some great images because we knocked out Liverpool in the final, you know, a couple of years back, and I've got some great pictures. Our fans would love it. I can't just go ahead and do it because potentially I'm breaking the law.
Yeah,
and it could
for sure.
Take a year, 18 months to get registered with the FCA the way they're taking at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. So, listen, this is an area that we touch on specifically in the article, but, you know, some crypto assets do have characteristics that are the same as traditional instruments, you know, shares and the like. Yeah. And they are typically referred to in the jargon of our legislation in the UK as security tokens. And they constitute instruments which are regulated under the Financial Services and Markets Act and subject to the full UK security regulation. There is a complex analysis attaching to whether or not a particular product offering would fall within that. But NFTs, you know, typically are providing contractual rights, licensing rights, and by realizing gains in selling those, you're not holding a right to financial return as such. You're holding something that you're putting into the market, but you're not holding a right to financial return, and so they're unlikely to constitute securities, as our basic analysis. But it also ultimately depends on the exact rights attached to the token.
Hang on, Nick. Yeah. So we've got the glorious world of crypto. It has a reputation for wanting to sort of, and I think personally unjustified to a great extent, but has a reputation for wanting to getting around the rules, not be regulated. We now have things like NFTs, which some jurisdictions are arguing they are a digital asset. They are potentially to be classed as a cryptocurrency. But if we actually class these not as a cryptocurrency, but class them as a security, and you could then sell these as a regulated company, nothing to do with crypto, but we're selling these as a security. So perversely, you could see a situation where NFTs want to be more regulated, not just be on the FCA crypto register, but be more regulated, because that'd be a quicker way to get them into the marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, you seldom see people wanting to be subject to more regulation, to be honest. and it's not like there's a sparsity of it. I mean, listen, I think as a general comment, all I'd say is that, you know, we're acting for a number of the tech companies who are in this field. And so far, the evidence of our eyes is that, where you're dealing with a responsible company, a well-known, you know, international company, they are, in our experience, taking those that we're dealing with anyway, taking a pretty responsible attitude towards this. And it is the case that there are bound to be providers. It's a bit like the Wild West, you know, any nascent new technology attracts a wide range of people into the ecosystem. And so, you know, my advice to folks is, if they want to trade in this market and they're a reputable sports body, they probably want to look for a reputable provider to partner up with, who they know is going to take a responsible attitude towards this, because you can get into some difficulties rapidly if you don't, clearly. And it's doubly complex by virtue of the point that I mentioned earlier on, the global aspect. And, you know, market practice at the moment, as I understand it, is not to do things like, you know, geo-block offerings to prevent them to get in. You know, it's obviously a new market, but that, you know, if your folks aren't doing that, what they're doing is taking a purposive, you know, analysis of local regulation, and they are staying out of, you know, they're structuring their offerings to avoid the specific requirements of that regulation. So if you're not allowed, for example, to have any local infrastructure, and you're focusing your drop and all the people and all the, you know, technology that you're using to make that happen is located outside the territory, then local regulations can sometimes be avoided, you know. So, you know, there are obviously workarounds, but, you know, the picture is still obviously in a very immature phase at the moment.
And you may not want to answer this question, but I've got to ask. You've obviously coming across challenging situations, and we are, you know, anyone involved in this sector, we are on the edge, I would argue the edge of the law, because it's just not clear. When you go and talk to, in particular, regulators, are they receptive, or is it sort of, look, we don't regulate this stuff, you just got to make sure your clients do AML, go away? Or are they engaging because they can see this is, you know, potentially it's a very big market? You know, look what's happened to the NBA Top Shots, as you said earlier on, or look what's happened with, I appreciate it's not a sport, but look what's happened with Axie Infinity, which is a pay as you play. They reckon they've turned over well over $2 billion in the first 3 months. So yeah. These aren't small sums of money. And actually, the Philippine government are very interested in that, because they can see some tax opportunities, because people are being paid in something which would appear to have some sort of value now. So are the regulators, are they engaging? Do they want to talk to you, or is it stony silence?
I would love to answer that question. That is not what I do, though, within the matrix, what we do. So I can avoid it by saying what I do is get some very clever regulatory lawyers to deal with that aspect of this.
I'm an old-fashioned
technology and intellectual property lawyer. So on the regulatory side, I drag in the real lawyers who deal with the regulators on this. My impression from speaking to them is it's a mixed bag, dependent on jurisdiction. But, you know, where there's this money involved, where there's this degree of market expansion, regulators are bound to be getting interested and engaging, if not now, very shortly. But the picture is obviously a mixed bag internationally.
Yeah. But presumably this also offers quite an interesting opportunity for, you know, a legal firm such as yourself. If some of your sport clients haven't come to you, presumably you can actually rattle their cage and say, look, is this something you think you ought to be looking at? Because this isn't, it's not confined to just one type of sport. There's opportunities. And you're talking about intellectual property. It doesn't necessarily even just have to be in the sporting field. We're already seeing, you know, an Anthony Hopkins film, for example, being funded by NFTs.
Well, yeah. Listen, yes. I mean, we had that idea. You know, was when we read the news from the coming out of the States already. So we've gone through that process of engaging with clients and friends to tell them about the opportunities, and we're pushing an open door largely. So it's no exaggeration to say that I've been spending, you know, for the last 3 months at least, a considerable part, maybe 50% or more of my time on these deals. And people have been receptive because of the numbers. But you raise an interesting point, because, yeah, it's clearly obviously not just sport, it's everybody. You know, the motion picture studios and producers are also looking at opportunities in this field. It raises massive opportunities for those that are involved in traditional character merchandising, which folks are clearly looking at and eyeing deals. You started to see some early deals coming out into the market. One of the interesting things for me is if you talk to a sports governing body at the moment, they're likely to tend to think of NFTs as something like a collectible, like the way you led on this call, you know, something like an old style card collectible,
yeah,
but for the new era. If you talk to technology companies, they see often NFTs as just being the way everything's going to be done. So, you know, if you're talking about tickets, then, you know, in fairly short order, they're going to be made available through NFT type processes. If you're talking about actioning pretty much all utilities around a sport or a club or anything else, you know, there may well be NFTs used in that structure. And so that.
And the metaverse, are they into that? These are all happening now.
So, you know, when you look at some of the global brands, and I'm not going to name any, but we're looking at some
very positioning.
I can't because there is clients.
You can mention the real thing, can't you?
And I know. Well, if you look at the sport, if you look at the sports apparel retailers, maybe that's the way to describe it. I'm not going to name any individual one, but you know, clearly a incredibly established, predictable business in the context of the real world.
Get a tick of approval from.
I'm not going to say anything else. So, what they're obviously all doing at the moment is looking at how they can take advantage of their, their businesses in the context of the metaverse and opening virtual stores and all the rest of it. And, it's not just those folks. You know, we're also dealing with, reasonably conservative financial institutions, banks who are looking at similar ideas.
Cool, that's perverse, isn't it? They're shutting the high street branches, but opening up metaverse ones.
Well, less staffing requirement, I think, is required.
Well, I saw the other day, Sotheby's have even opened up a branch in Decentraland. It's a sort of a digital version of their sort of Georgian building in Bond, just off Bond Street. So, as you say, it's right across the piece, isn't it?
It's absolutely. I'm not sure it's what Zuckerberg envisaged when he was talking about going to the best after party ever on his video. I think everybody's looking at it clearly now, and NFTs form part of that matrix, and appropriate words be used in that context. And so you're seeing it as a facet, you're going to see it as a facet in all deals, which was one of the key issues, because what you're dealing with is a whole, this is an industry which cuts across all product classes. It cuts across all facets of a business, and it's an issue which didn't exist really, 12 months ago. So you got a whole bunch of folks looking through, sometimes quite, sweatily, a program of advanced agreements they've got in place with providers in all those other product categories, trying to work out whether actually they can do NFTs anyway, because it affects their exclusivity offering. And can create quite a cluttered environment. So that's one of the issues that folks need to be addressing if they're not. It's looking at, actually, you may think you've granted the rights to somebody to do X, but did you inadvertently grant them the right to do NFTs as well? Yeah. Big issue across media.
The other thing which also is interesting is we didn't do them with yourself, but with one of your colleagues, Martin Bartlam.
He's the guy you need to be talking about regulatory issues.
He loves all that. But we've been running like meetups groups for people interested in the sort of technology of blockchain and digital assets, going back to sort of 2017. And one of the common comments that people used to say, look, it's all very well talking about all this stuff, guys. And we used to get asset managers and banks and startups to come in and just not sell or raise money. They weren't allowed to do that. Because my company and DLA aren't authorized to do that. But it was more to just to give education and say, these are some of the challenges, what's good, that's bad. But two things came up. Number one, normally by Martin, being a good Northern lad, where's the money? Show me the money. Why should we be spending all this time? And I think you've already answered that one. You're spending a lot of time on this topic, and you've now got some blue chip clients. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know you're working on some stuff at the moment with very well-known brands. And we do have, you know, if you look at what's out there, I mentioned Sotheby's, you know, Nike, Gucci, Burberry, Coca-Cola, all of these in the public domain are doing stuff in this area. So there's money now being made out of blockchain technology, which is behind this. And number two, the time and time again, people would say to me, show me why we need to use this thing called blockchain. We don't need it. It's just another faddy technology. But it seems to me this is a really good example of where blockchain technology is being used. And you can't do this on the back of a fag packet or a spreadsheet. You actually do need to have some of the benefits of that technology to underpin it. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, well, I'm old enough, as are you, to remember the dot-com bubble. And the phrase that came up during that was the killer app. You know, you need the killer application in order to promote your new, fledgling service, and then things blow up. And this is it, isn't it? I mean, this is obviously one of those things which, stands on the precipice at the moment. It could become something that's completely indispensable and has, ubiquitous utility across organizations. And the jury's still out on that, but it certainly seems to be going in that direction very quickly.
Nick, I think you're absolutely right. This could be a good example where effectively you go to other companies and say, well, look, these brands are getting involved using the technology in some shape or form. Don't you think it's time that you reconsidered? So, yeah, really good point. Really good point. Oh, well, Nick, as you can gather, I could go on talking all day about this. But, James, I know we're coming to the end of the show. Have you got any thoughts from across the pond as to, what Nick and I have been talking about there?
Well, we are, big proponent of NFTs, at least even on the Cyber FM side, with what we're doing, where we're going. But, yeah, I mean, I agreed. It's the first time ever I've agreed with everything that this attorney has said.
I
there I
believe
said
that.
It, right? You'll never hear me say it again.
All right.
I was impressed. The you referenced the NBA being one of the front runners in basically crypto. And fun fact, Cyber FM is an official sponsor of the junior NBA. On the U.S. side level. So maybe we had a little bit of an impact in that back in the day.
There you go.
There you go.
It was nice to see it all come back around.
Ahead of the game.
Right. Ahead of the game. Crystal ball. In the game.
I mean, there's going to be, there's going to be some issues attaching to it as well. I mean, it's not, there's obviously a lot being written about the...
Hang on, is this the question mark? Is this the caveat?
Yeah, this is one of them. there's a lot being written, aside from things we've spoken about, about everybody is very focused at the moment across sport, for example, with our environmental issues. And I think the industry needs to find a way of addressing those in terms of energy consumption. There's certainly a heightened expectation that, the technology companies will be looking for a solution to how to, mint these and market them in the most energy efficient ways. Those sorts of issues are real and important now to these brands who, have spent a long time looking at how they can make their own businesses more, carbon neutral, move towards make them more effective environmental organizations. So that is one area that I think the industry does need to obviously spend a lot of time getting its acts right and its story straight on.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, Nick, thank you very much. And if anyone wants to get hold of yourself or DLA, I know you're a big old law firm, but presumably you just go online and look up DLA Piper.
Yeah, anytime. So
what about yourself? If the local baseball club wants to speak to you.
Well, feel free to call. So I'm happy to give my email address if it helps. It's nick.fitzpatrick@dlapiper.com. We're open 24 hours. So very happy to help.
All right. So it's nick.fitzpatrick@dlapiper.com.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And obviously, if anyone wants a copy of the article, then get hold of myself, Johnny Fry, JONN. YFRY on LinkedIn, or you can contact James at cyber.fmradio, where you're listening to us at the moment. So, James, that's it for another week. So I think we're back on next week, just before Santa's wrapping up all his presents, and then one more show before the end of the year.
Yeah, it really is almost over.
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, Nick, we'll try and get you back on the air next year and give us an update when you can tell us all about some of the brands you have been working on and some things perhaps worked. And I'm sure you'll find an opportunity to have an argument with someone else that hasn't worked. So I bet the litigation boys are rubbing their hands in glee. Yeah. Someone's bound to drop a faux pas, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, there's lots could go wrong here. And there's lots of commercial learnings that are really going on in real time now. You know, I think the market norms are just starting to set themselves, you know, how you churn revenue from secondary sales, and, you know, that those sorts of, you know, issues are currently being, you know, worked out. And there's lots to say on that. So, yeah, it'd be nice to come back and have a chat about all that.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. We will. We'll get you back on the air. And okay, James, thanks again for sorting this out today. And we'll be back with the listeners next week.
I never got my American joke in, but especially like maybe next time. Take time. Take care.
A Jacksonville Jaguars joke. Go for it.
Jaguar. I keep telling you that. It's not a Jaguar.
You know what? That's what I'm going to do. See, I'm a New Yorker, and I'm in Georgia. I mean, I'm at the part of Georgia where we're really Jacksonville, Florida. So everybody loves the Jaguars. I'm going to go down next time I'm in Jax, and the CEO, Khan, when he goes to London to make them play, I'm going to be like, you know, you should know it's the Jaguars.
Jaguars, that's right.
Jaguars.
And it's not like Austin Powers' Shaguar. That's how you got to remember to pronounce it.
That's naughty, baby.
Night-night.
All right. Take care, everybody. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.